We knew Lino would feel right at home in Canada, considering Minnesota basically has the same weather all year round, right?
It is the Catholic Guy Show here in Toronto, Ontario, broadcasting all this week. Hey, at the Salt and Light headquarters, Father Tom Rosica is with me, the CEO of Salt and Light Television. Saltandlighttv.org is the website. We're going to talk about a bunch of things. First of all, we were talking earlier about the fact that how closely you worked with John Paul II, you know, Pope Francis. You're the English language assistant to the Holy See press office, which means you got to be answering all the questions in English. Before we want to get to all that, though, Father Tom, I want to talk a little bit about you. We're in Canada. You know, it's not even a question of how does a guy become a priest who becomes a Vatican guy. But what were you doing when you grew up that you decided the priesthood would be for you?
I grew up in Rochester, New York.
So how did you end up in Canada? Maybe we'll get to that later on.
I was deported. No. I grew up in Rochester, grew up in an Italian Catholic family, went to grade school in Rochester, two different schools, grade school, a Bazilian Fathers High School, and a Bazilian Fathers University. So it was there that I got hooked.
Now, for a lot of people, they hear the word Bazilian Fathers, and you go, they had not a million.
Bazilian.
Not a billion. A billion.
We got vocations coming out of our ears. St. Basil the Great. We're a French origin community, 1822 in southern France after the French Revolution. In fact, we just made a documentary on our origins. I presented it to our congregation during our chapter this summer. They loved it. I wanted to be a priest, okay?
Why is that? I'm not trying to speak ill of the priesthood, but why did you want to be a priest?
I was exposed to some wonderful priests growing up. I remember in my parish church, people loved the priests. I remember sitting there a couple of times thinking, I wouldn't mind. I want to be like that one.
I'd like to be loved.
Yeah. A couple of them left the priesthood afterwards, but it was what they were doing which really impressed me and the way they were doing it. I came from one of the largest parishes in the diocese. We had five priests, if you can imagine that.
Most people.
Tons of masses.
Wow.
I was an altar boy, then became head of the altar boys. And, I liked it. I didn't want to be a Bazilian father because they were my high school teachers. And I remember saying, I don't want to be a disciplinarian, giving people jugs or detentions and all kinds of other things, as we called it.
Of course.
And it was in my senior year in high school that I really liked the principal and this older teacher. He was the art history teacher, and we became friends. And I remember asking, I was living a pretty normal life in high school. I was on the student council. I was the head of the senior ball. I was in the newspaper, the yearbook editor, all that kind of stuff. And I asked the principal of the school, Father Al Galen, who's still alive in Houston. I said, hey, you guys got a formation program? Like, what's it all about? And I remember he looked at me and said, I thought you'd never ask. So I checked it out, never thinking, though, that I wanted to be a teacher or whatever, because, you know, most of us were teachers, or most of us are teachers. I did think about other communities. I remember writing away for the Jesuits, and the Franciscans had a big, you know, I still have all the brochures they mailed to me.
Did you still have them all these years later?
I kept them all, yeah, because, I mean, now those are the big decisions.
And if it doesn't work out, sort of like keeping an ex-girlfriend's photo around. If the current girlfriend doesn't work out.
No, we don't do that. It's not exactly like that.
I mean, oh, good.
We're not called the rebound fathers, you know. And, but I remember very clearly, I had the opportunity to go to a Jesuit high school. It was a very funny thing. When I look back now, I chuckle. There was a big spelling bee in Rochester at the Jesuit high school called McQuaid Jesuit High School, which is a very good high school. And I was in the spelling bee. And if you win the spelling bee, you get a scholarship to go to the school. I came in second place because I spelled chimney the wrong way. I spelled it the French way because I was taking French in school at the time. So I spelled it cheminée instead of chimney. And of course, I come in second place. In second place, you get a big silver tray and a box of candy. You don't get a scholarship. After that, I applied to go to the Bazilian High School. My mother and father were quietly very happy because they liked the Bazilians. My mom taught at the Bazilian High School for many years. Anyway, after I go through the enrollment process, they call me from the Jesuit High School to say the kid who won the first place is turning it down. Are you interested?
And can you spell chimney properly this time?
So I said, no, I've already applied to Aquinas. And besides, there's Bazilian fathers in my blood. So I didn't go. I often wonder, you know, every now and then you look back.
Yep.
What if I went down this path or that path? if I had gone to McQuaid Jesuit High School, I'm not sure where I'd be right now.
I see. I like that you ask these questions, Father Tom, because this is the thing that I do all the time. And we as Christians say all the time that, well, God has a plan and we figure out God's plan. But then I say, well, if you look around, though, the girl or guy that person married, if you didn't go to that high school or college or didn't have that job, would you have ever met now calling your soulmate? So it's interesting what you're saying is you're in the religious order, the Basilians now. But if you had gone to, that's because you went to a Basilian high school. If you'd gone to a Jesuit high school, would God have called you to become a Jesuit? I do find that interesting to wonder.
You see, you have to look at things through the eyes and lenses of providence. I believe very much in divine providence. Most of us live by chance. We don't live by providence, nor would we ever dare naming something as providential. But I think the choices have certain results, consequences, whatever they may be, positive or negative. And you look back and you say, the Lord placed me there for this reason. Religious orders, after all, are simply the vehicles. When I hear people say, I want to be a priest, but I want to be freed of a diocese or religious community, I said, we don't have free-flowing priests, okay? We don't have these bodies floating above. You got to enter through some place. You enter through a diocese. You enter through a religious community, through a big congregation, but you got to go someplace. We don't just plop down. The stork doesn't leave us down there and say, you hover at 30,000 feet and you're a universal priest. That's called a nut. It's not a universal priest, okay? So we enter, and my way of entering the church was entering through a small religious community. Could have been a big religious order, whatever I entered. I have no regrets. But I do look back and say, isn't this interesting? I wonder, and there's nothing wrong with wondering. You know, we see this portrayed very beautifully in Nikos Katanzaki's book on The Last Temptation of Christ. The book, by the way, is much better than the movie. And watching Christ on the cross, or reading about that, he's hanging on the cross. And if I remember the book right, he sees all of these people passing before the cross, the people who were part of his life, the people with whom he had good relationships and friendships and even intimate relationships, and nothing, you know, seedy like the movie portrayed.
Right.
And yet you see the hand of God in designing all of this, that God wanted you nailed to the cross. He doesn't want you nailed to come down, you know, jump down, save yourself, that last temptation of Christ. Jesus was there, and yet he saw these scenes flash before him. I think it's like that with our lives, too. But the important thing is, there's a lovely French expression. I've got the prayer card in my office book. It says, une plume divine écrit notre histoire.
All right, let me see if I... Because I took high school French.
So what does it mean?
When I got my master's degree in theology, I was able to translate theological French into English. Can you repeat the phrase?
Une plume divine écrit notre histoire.
A plum that is ripe is not right for the Lord.
That French teacher at Collegeville needs the head examined a bit.
I have no idea what I just said.
You and Sebastian, I think you missed that French course, you know?
I have no idea what I said.
Une plume divine, a divine pen, is writing this story.
Damn.
Plume is both pen and a feather. I prefer pen here. There's no feather writing my story. but a divine pen is writing our stories. And that's when you realize that, hey, we've got one chance at this thing called life. Do it well.
A divine pen is writing this story.
That's right.
Yeah. See, but listen to this, Father Tom.
What language?
Je m'appelle Lino.
Mon Dieu.
My name is Lino. Je voudrais jambon. I would like ham.
And I'm going to serve you pork tonight.
Now, so actually, and you speak a number of languages, something else I want to talk to you about, but you find yourself called to the religious life.
Yeah.
You become a Basilian father. Did you know anything about St. Basil the Great? Should the audience know about St. Basil the Great?
You could if you want. It's not the most exciting story. I mean, we chose the name kind of like by accident, or we were... It's very strange. St. Basil was the great 4th century Archbishop of Caesarea in Asia, a great doctor of the church, a defender of truth, the teacher of the Holy Spirit, educator, model for youth. That's where we come in. So when we were founded in France, in Annonay, France, in the last part of the 1800s.
Annonay, I believe I translate to Annonay.
Annonay. Annonay. Yeah, it's right south of Lyon, 60 kilometers south of Lyon in the hills. A beautiful area, very poor. Anyway, we were founded by 10 diocesan priests after the French Revolution. Priests had been expelled. Many had been killed after the revolution. We hid in the hills. And when the coast was clear, we came down from those hills into Annonay, first to Saint-Symphorien and then to Annonay. And we founded a school to start to build up, again, the clergy in the church. And we were educators. And when we said, what are we going to call ourselves? One of the names of this little church was called Saint-Basile, this little parish. I think they had submitted the name to be called Francis or some oblates of Francis, because Annonay was probably the first Franciscan foundation outside of Italy.
From Francis of Assisi.
Francis of Assisi. And I think the response came back. I saw the letter. The Franciscans, there are enough of them. Choose something else. So,
there's enough Franciscans.
So we chose St. Basil, St. Basile. Everybody thinks, including John Paul II, that we were all the Oriental Church, the Eastern Churches, Orthodox, Byzantine Rite, and everything else. In fact, Pope John Paul II teased me a couple times. I said, no, I have no beards. No long masses, we're Latins, you know. In fact, in Rome, when they ask, we say Basiliani Latini.
For the Latin.
The Latin Rite. Not that we're all speaking Latin, but we're from the Latin Rite and, you know, this part of the world. Now, how we end up in Toronto, 1852, one of our former students from that little college in Annonay comes to Canada. He's named Archbishop of Toronto, Armand de Charbonnel. A French one. He's not Italian.
Unfortunately.
And Charbonnel remembers his old teachers. And at that time, he writes to Annonay. They send over a large number of this small fledgling group who don't go to Montreal or Quebec, where they should have gone, speaking French. They land here in this WASP Anglophone area. And this is where we took off from here, from Toronto. It went to Detroit, then to Houston, Gary, Indiana, Rochester, New York, New Mexico, all kinds of other places. Then we went into Mexico and in Colombia. So that's what I call une plume divine qui écrit notre histoire. There's a divine pen writing this because no madman would have concocted all this.
And that's why the Catholic Guy Show is here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, with Father Tom Rosica, a kid from New York who ended up in Toronto, who, among other things, being the CEO of Salt and Light Television, and one of the other jobs you've got, the English language assistant to the Holy See Press Office. Now, what that means basically is when journalists have questions about the Pope, about the Vatican, they can ask it in a bunch of languages, but if they want to ask it in English, they go to you, Father Tom.
Right. This is the penance that was imposed upon me by my friend, Father Federico Lombardi. When the Pope I had known Federico since 1999, because in working for preparation for World Youth Day, he was head of Vatican TV and in the Vatican Radio. And he's, you talk about heroes, role models, he's one. I love the guy. He's incredible. And he's a Jesuit. He's very good.
And for longtime listeners of this show, they know that all the years I've gotten to bring my show to the Vatican Radio, or the times I've sometimes made joke about certain Vatican officials, Father Lombardi, the press spokesperson, the papal spokesperson,
right,
in charge of the Holy See Press Office. Unfortunately, you know, a few years ago, I wrote a book called Sinner.
Right.
And ever since then, whenever he sees me, the first words out of his mouth are, Sinner!
We speak about you very often. Your name is on the special list there.
I'm afraid it is.
They call you Signor Leo Unruly. And I said, no, Ruli. Anyway, Father Lombardi phoned me the day after Pope Benedict resigned. I'll never forget. I was in this office. We had a terrible day the day the Pope resigned. All hell broke loose here. This media showed up. And, you know, this new thing that was happening was a cold February day, February the 11th. And Father Lombardi called and he said in that lovely, sweet voice, Quando vieni? When are you coming?
When are you coming, yeah.
I said, mese di marzo, I'll come in March for the conclave and whatever. No, venga subito. Santo subito, you know?
Yeah, venga santo subito.
Now, venga subito, in terms of the Italian interpretation, I said, now, that means come right away. Quando? I said, I got to teach this weekend at the seminary. Subito. Come immediately. Get here as quick as possible. And he said, bring Sebastian. So Sebastian Gomes came with me, your colleague from Collegeville.
Yes, guy I know.
And we were in for a treat for 6 weeks. Remember when we got to Rome, I've never been received like that in my life in Rome. I mean, they needed help. And I remember being given the keys immediately, take me to my room at the Jesuit Curia. They put me next to Father Lombardi's bedroom so I can be under his watchful eye.
Make sure you don't screw this up.
6 weeks or 7 weeks of intensive work, 18 hours a day, sometimes 20 hours a day. And I remember they said in the beginning, we have a kind of a deluge of reporters. And after 3 days I was there, I said, this ain't no deluge. This is the tsunami. 6,400 accredited journalists. And then a whole bunch more who didn't go through the accreditation process. And it was one of the greatest teaching moments in the life of the church, because we didn't have a papal funeral. We didn't have a playbook. When Celestine resigned several years before, 700 years ago, there were no notes, no film footage, and Mother Angelica wasn't around to show us what was going on.
Right. There was no TV. You didn't know what happened.
Nothing. So what do? We have to tell this story. And it became a great teaching moment. And there, the privilege of sitting next to Federico, people called us La Trinità, the Trinity. Father Lombardi in the middle, God the Father. On his right was Gil Tamayo, a wonderful priest from Spain, who's now the Secretary General of the Spanish Bishops. And on his left, myself. People said, which one are you? And I said, Dio Padre, Padre Lombardi. Dio Figlio e Padre Gil. E io lo Spirito Santo. I'm the Holy Spirit here. And it was a wonderful experience. Now, in the process, we built up a list of English language journalists who were coming every day. You were one of them.
Yes.
And we provided those teachings, those briefings, those interminable briefings with the inane questions from our nostri paesani italiani about the smoke and
the Italians
and their shoes and what the Pope is eating. And is he going to be sealed inside the apartment at Castel Gandolfo when he's there? I said, we don't seal apartments with people in them. And then after it was all over, Father Lombardi called me the night before I was coming back home on Palm Sunday. And he said, I want you to maintain the list and keep up the rapport and the relationship with the journalists. We've never had this before. So what started off as several hundred, it's close to 800. And I send out a bulletin every morning on behalf of Father Lombardi from Salt and Light with Vatican information and teaching moments. So I explain things, because this Pope sometimes offers us opportunities to clarify or explain things greater in depth.
Well, that's what I want to get into. Father Tom Rosica, as sort of the liaison now between the Vatican and all English journalists, not just in North America, but around the world, what do people want to know about the Pope? What do people want to know about Pope Francis? Because you know as better than anybody, really, what people's reactions are. Now, when I say people, I'm talking specifically about journalists who kind of shape the way most of us think about the world, right? What do journalists want to know? What do people want to know about Pope Francis?
They are intrigued by his normalcy, his humanity, his simplicity, his goodness. Intrigued, enticed. They want to come closer and learn. I just talked to Father Lombardi on the phone for quite a while, just before I came in this torture chamber with you.
Thank you.
And I told him, I said, Father Lombardi, in preparation for the synod, we have a number of journalists coming from North America, and they're all excited. And I said, a month ago, I sent each of them personally the Instrumentum Laboris, the working document. And over the past 2 weeks, I've heard from six key journalists, big time. These are not little reporters or, you know, papers in Diocese X or whatever. And they said, we've read the Instrumentum Laboris. We've got questions on page 16 and this question, and help us to understand this. And you don't take these things lightly. These are people that are wanting to learn about the church. So I view my role as both information sharing, but evangelization. I don't tell them that I'm here to evangelize you, Anderson Cooper. I'm here to evangelize CBS. I'm here to spread the good news. And I've discovered in these big media places some truly outstanding people. One of them, for example, who surfaced, who I got to know through this process, for whom I have immense admiration, and this is not a paid service announcement, is Scott Pelley from CBS News. We made the Francis Effect documentary. We have in our documentary Anderson Cooper, Diane Sawyer, Scott Pelley, all kinds of other figures. What's Francis's impact on you? Dealing with Scott particularly, I was very moved by that whole experience, as I was by Diane and Anderson.
Now, just for those who might not know, the Francis Effect documentary that Father Tom Rosica is talking about, produced by Salt and Light TV. You can find out more. Go to saltandlighttv.org. What was the impact for Scott Pelley? What's Pope Francis's election meant for him, for instance?
People are taken by his simplicity, his clarity of expression, and his connection with other people, the deep compassion. For example, Scott Pelley told us that his hobby, Scott's interest when he's not working there at the CBS Evening News, is looking after refugees and caring for refugees. He's a Methodist, deeply Christian man with extraordinary values. And another thing you notice when you're dealing with these big, famous people is the way they deal with their staffs and their people with them. That says everything.
Sure.
And what impressed me very much is watching Anderson Cooper dealing with his wonderful producer, Charlie, watching Diane Sawyer of ABC, soon to be Happy Memory, I think, of ABC.
She just retired, yeah.
Who's a great lady, and watching the staff and how they treat one another says a lot. And watching Scott and that wonderful crew at CBS and at NBC, my great friend Ann Curry and all of the reporters across the country. These are very, very good people. And as a church, we owe it to them to understand the vocabulary of breaking news, because that does not enter into the lexicon of a lot of diocesan offices of communication. Breaking news means, yeah, I'll call you back next week.
Right.
We have to respond and have the humility to say, I don't know, or we made a mistake, or let me get you more information on this.
And Father Tom Rosica, as a guy who works for the Holy See, who works for the Vatican, I've got a lot of friends who are, I would say, very intense Catholics. Now, I've got most of my friends who are very lax Catholics, but my friends who are very intense Catholics would always say, Lino, you know, you work in television or you work in radio, not just in the Catholic side, but because I worked in the regular, well-paying side for a while in my career. They would say, why does everybody got an axe to grind against the church? Everybody's against the church. And I would usually say, well, you know, we don't usually give them a lot of reasons to tell good stories about us. We give them reasons to criticize us. We give them reasons to prove we have something to hide. We're not always there to help myself when I was a journalist for CBS or my friends who are still there. Would you say that's the right assessment that you would have as well? That now that you're working for the Vatican on a more official basis, on a very official basis, you go, well, we haven't always been there for journalists, and that might be why there's not always been the best relationship.
A lot of us didn't take seriously some of Jesus's words, like don't hide your light under a bushel.
True.
And so we've spent our time specializing in that.
specializing in hiding our light.
We forget this business about good news. We also forget what humility requires of us. I mean, the sex abuse crisis was a very powerful moment in the life of the church, certainly not over yet, but it brought us to our knees and it helped us to become humble and to humbly admit we were wrong. The more honest we can be, the more credible is our message. The more obfuscating and covering up we are, we give people a good reason to doubt and to become angry. Now, regarding those people that are angry, there are some that are genuinely angry because it is their signature piece. Whether it be the church or the Lions Club or this group or Scouts and you name it, their vocation is to be angry.
Right.
And that anger is not caused by the church, but we are sitting ducks at times in the church. We kind of invite that. The key is a lot of times you can't take it personally because a lot of times you get it, but good. There are those who are genuinely angry against the church, and those people I have a great concern for and a care for, and how can we reach out and welcome them back? And Pope Francis has made our lives very easy, much easier in doing it. Many of my friends have said, this guy makes you want to become a better person. I've heard people say, he's given me a good reason to return to the church. He's restored my faith. Do you realize who this guy is? Like, several people have said, which ad company did you hire to get him?
Don't you wish we were that smart?
I wish we had a strategy. The best one of all was the date when he went to confession, that famous day in March. We were televising the penance service. I was in my office right here. The guy in master control came right. He said, look. And I turned, and I see the Pope going to confession. Within minutes, the telephones lit up here, and the heads of the major news networks called, while the service is still going on, asking if they can have the name of the priest who heard the Pope's confession because they want to feature him on the evening news. And I said very gently, I'm sorry, we don't do that. We don't reveal those names, nor will he talk.
Of course not.
If he does, you shoot him, you know? Anyway, I said, we're not going to do that. Well, after it was all over, one of my colleagues in one of the big news agencies in the United States phoned and said, Tom, I've got to admit, what an incredible strategy this was to get people to go back to confession. So later that evening, I phoned Father Lombardi. It was late at night. He's at the Jesuit house in Rome. I said, Federico, this was an incredible thing today. And they called and said, ma che strategia, stupenda. And I can still hear Father Lombardi, ma che strategia, what strategy? There was no strategy here. what he wanted to do.
This is the Pope.
But that's the beauty of Francis. And he's given us a lot of work. You know, he's ruffled all kinds of feathers. But I thank God every single day. Because when I look at where we were in the years before Francis, I loved Pope Benedict. He was very poorly served. Very poorly. So he deserved much better. Benedict's a saint in my books. And those who were around him created blockades that were very unnecessary. And of course, that propagated the myths about Benedict. Benedict is the quintessential humble gentleman and servant, you know, the worker in the Lord's vineyard, as he said. And it was difficult because of all of the missteps during Benedict's reign. I felt like I was working in a mop-up agency.
Sure.
Defending, explaining, and people became cynical. With Francis now, yeah, every now and then something comes out of Francis's mouth and you got to spend some time. But you know what? Francis has invited people to be merciful. Merciful with him and merciful with others. And he is, when people say, what's the new evangelization all about? I said, look at Francis. That's the new evangelization right there. And he wasn't even at the synod.
Well, I am glad you were right here. Father Tom Rosica, CEO of Salt and Light Television. Check out the website, saltandlighttv.org, for all the work they do, including the documentary The Francis Effect, as Father Tom pointed out, with Anderson Cooper in it and Scott Pelley and Diane Sawyer and among many other folks. Also, a book he's written called John Paul II, A Saint for Canada. And as a man who knew John Paul II very, very well, you can rely on that book as well. Father Tom, always good to have you on the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Quick break. Plenty of Catholic Guy show ahead, continuing from Canada after this.
Lino will be right back so he can get used to some of the Canadian terminology up here.
Why are you saying soda? It's pop.